it's 10 o'clock, so I think we're going to get going. I'm going to be muting everyone now, so hold on a second. I'm going to unmute our presider. Just a couple of announcements before we get going. The service is being recorded, and it's available online and in the member area. And if you can do the speaker view to see who's currently speaking, or you can do the gallery view to see a bunch of little Brady Bunch pictures of us. And I think that's all I have for announcements. So I'll let Ron take it away.
All right, I gotta go. Fine, there it is. Start with the opening song by Jim Scott. And he has written this tune that you use or familiar Gather the Spirit, but he had a friend Pat Lamana, who wrote the COVID-19 version of the song. I think it's really fun to hear. And so here we go.
Okay. Oh, wait, now I hear it.
I wrote this song 30 years ago, so my friend
here we go.
Pat Lamana could give it this contemporary message. Gather in spirit, not face to face. Let's do what we can to flatten the curve. Wash your hands often and don't touch your face. This virus is something
Well, good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Ron Fry. My pronouns are he, him, his, and with my Oklahoma background, y'all. I've been a member of Prairie for several years, and I'm active both on the nominating committee and in the currently inactive choir. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. So welcome. If there's new people, we're glad to see you. Later during our virtual coffee hour at the end of the service, we invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. We will also have joys and concerns during that time. Now, we have a few announcements, and you got an order of service by email, so you could look at those if you wish, or you can know that you have a permanent record to go back to. We are sharing our offering this quarter with the Street Pulse, and that is the organization and name of the newspaper that provides income to Madison's homeless through direct newspaper sales. You can go to Prairie's website and click on Give to make an offering. Moving on, the UUA General Assembly is totally online. It's totally virtual. And the deadline to register is June 15th. Rachel sent some information about that just recently, so you could become a part of that. Also, please send Kathy Converse a brief statement of things you are doing or have done at work, home, or through monetary or in-kind contributions to help care for the earth. So if you're doing things to care for the earth, send that information to Kathy, and that's going to be an upcoming service. Finally, Virtual Dungeons and Dragons, a beginner's group, is a meeting every Monday at 4:30 p.m., and that wasn't finally other than just on that one piece of paper. On Wednesday, Fun with Holly this week is at 6:30 p.m., and all are welcome to join by Zoom. And then the Virtual Dungeons & Dragons Advance Group is every Friday at 4:30. And now we will have Mary Mullen do the chalice lighting.
Today I'm reading This Time of Uncertainty by Reverend Amy Williams Clark. We gather in this time of uncertainty, full of unknowns, as angst closes in upon us. We light this chalice with a flame that draws us together. With this flame, we cut the dark dankness of isolation and are warmed by the fires of our interconnection. From this moment, this radical moment, we find a certainty within the knowable bonds of love and community.
Okay, next we will have the silent meditation. And I just happened to have the time. Now we have a video to watch for the story for all ages. And it's about Tiny the God.
Good morning. Today's story is Tiny the God by Becky Brooks. Once upon a time, there was a tiny little itty bitty, very small, very tiny, very little God named Tiny. She lived her life hearing stories about all the big gods. And well, let's face it, she was jealous. She knew she needed to find some spark that made her existence meaningful. And so Tiny watched the humans for a while. And then she happened upon an idea. She thought, this'll let them know that I'm the bomb. Ready? Here it is. You are not alone. She took the form of a very light breeze, and in a voice so quiet each person could only hear it in their minds, she said, "You are not alone. You are not alone." People loved it. I mean, who wouldn't love to hear that? And so pretty soon Tiny was comforting people all over with "You are not alone." Every evening she would take the form of the breeze and whisper it in the minds of the people, until she encountered someone who wasn't comforted at all. When Miriam heard Tiny's words, instead of feeling comforted, she felt agitated. She kept saying it to herself over and over again, "You are not alone, you are not alone." And she tossed and she turned and she couldn't sleep. In the morning, she went to read the paper, and instead of skimming it like she usually did, she found herself drinking in every single story. She was only halfway through when she was crying. "I am not alone," she said. I am connected to every one of these people. They live in my town and my country and the world. They love their children like I love mine. They're scared sometimes, and so am I. They hurt like I hurt. I am not alone. I can help." Tiny was surprised. It hadn't occurred to her that someone might think of it that way. And so she watched over Miriam as this interesting development took place. She saw Miriam meet a coworker online in a meeting, and they talked about a law that they wanted passed. And then Tiny noticed when Miriam got off the call, she wrote a letter right away to her senator and mailed it. She noticed that when Miriam turned in an online order for groceries, she bought a little extra and then delivered it and left it on her neighbor's porch. She noticed that Miriam got tears in her eyes when she gathered for online worship with her congregation and they sang her favorite hymn. She watched as Miriam wrote postcards to friends far and near and family. And she waved to dog passers as they walked by, and she hung lights in her window to cheer the walkers as they passed by on the street. But most importantly, Tiny watched when Miriam received a call from a long-lost friend, someone she hadn't talked to in years. And he said, "I'm really having a hard time right now." And as he started to explain his troubles, he began to cry. Miriam pulled up her favorite chair and sat down, said, "Take your time. I'm listening. You are not alone. I am here. I am here." Tiny heard those words echo in her mind. "You are not alone. I am here. You are not alone. I am here." In that moment, Tiny knew that she was nothing without Miriam's hands and heart and spirit. And she knew that what she wanted, what the world needed more than anything, was what Miriam had learned to give. So Tiny went to work. Instead of just spending her evenings spreading the gospel of "You are not alone," she spent her nighttimes doing it too, and her mornings and her afternoons, and pretty soon she was spending every moment until she became the breeze itself. That's why there are no paintings of Tiny, no busts or holy books, just a breeze, a low voice, and many, many helping hands, loving hearts, and caring spirits. You can hear the echo if you listen closely. When water bottles are left in the desert for those who risk crossing it, "You are not alone. I am here." At the bedside of a dying man, "You are not alone. I am here." in the jailhouse and the sanctuary. You are not alone. I am here, separate and together. You are not alone. I am here. May it be so.
Great to hear. You are not alone. I am here. Really nice that I have Renee propping me up a little bit and all the rest of you tolerating what I make a mistake or two. But I want to introduce to you now our presenter, Carla Tennis. She's the executive director for Porchlight, and she has a master's degree in social work from the UW-Madison with a concentration in mental health. She's worked for Porchlight since 1991. She did her internship at the men's drop-in shelter at Grace Episcopal Church in 1990 and has worked or supervised every housing and service program managed by Porchlight. She's on the board of directors of Goodwill of South Central Wisconsin, a member of the United Way of Dane County's Affordable Housing Fund Committee, an active member of Downtown Madison, Inc., and the Downtown Rotary. Today, she's talking to us about Porchlight's response to the pandemic. And this relates to our first principle as Unitarians, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Carla, it's your turn.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning, everyone, as I come to you from my bedroom. It's great to see all of you. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak this morning. I want to first thank all of you for our wonderful partnership for so many years, your financial support, your monthly meals at the shelter. The men miss all of you and your delicious breakfasts. So I'm going to just talk about all of our different programs, kind of what this virus meant to the homeless in our community and our response to that and the community response to that. Write down your questions. We'll take some questions and answers at the end. And I'm going to talk about all of our different programs. I know that you guys are very familiar with the men's shelter and maybe a few of our others, but people are kind of a little overwhelmed by all that we do because they hadn't heard of many of the different things that we do. The first program that I want to talk to you about, there actually was an article in this morning's Wisconsin State Journal. If you've been up early and had your coffee and read the paper already, we run a eviction prevention program called DIGS, and we've been running this program for over 20 years. And the goal of that program is to keep families housed in the community. So it's just a little bit of financial support. It could be a little bit of money for back rent, a little bit of money for utilities. Somebody might have a job and need their car and their car breaks down, or they, you know, use a little bit of their rent money for their kids' medicine, and so they need a little help with the rent. The article in this morning's paper was a fundraiser that local musicians in Madison are having to help the homeless. So they're doing different online concerts and things like that and raising funds for our homeless families to stay housed. One of the things that I love about this program is it's not for families and singles who live in Porchlight housing, but it's families and singles who live in the community. So they've been able to find housing in the community. But as many as you know, they pay 50% or more of their income toward rent. So how this program has been affected by the pandemic, how it normally works is we have one staff person, Hassan, and he meets individually to do intakes. Last year, he met with 1,100 families, and that's not individuals and families, that's 1,100 households. In 2019, he met with face-to-face. He had enough funds to help 700 of those families with their crisis need that they had. And how we switched that up with the pandemic is he's now just meeting with them online or over the phone. So they just call in and he's able to do all the checking and the verifying and send out a check. All of the funds are sent directly to the landlord, you know, to the utility company. One of the things that he said very early on that he is seeing is a lot of folks, a lot of families who have never called in for help before. So he's the only staff person who's ever done this. So he has like a 20-year perspective. And so the families that we normally help, you know, kind of every couple of years, they're still calling, but just a huge increase in families who have never had a need to seek out support, right? That have completely lost their income. He said one of the largest groups that he's seeing that he had never seen before was Hispanic families. Many families who, you know, the husband and wife and the families had, you know, entry-level jobs at hotels and restaurants, and all of these jobs, you know, closed down. And there was a huge language barrier. He said he was talking to the children, he was talking to neighbors, anything that he could to understand what their need was. And so we were able to hook him up with a language line where, you know, they could call in and then somebody would call us and interpret for them. And that has been very helpful. But again, a group of people who have not needed support in the past. We received a grant from a $12,000 grant from United Way very early on in the pandemic to help some of these folks. And so we're kind of sparsing that out month by month to help those folks as they call in. And so what we do, how we gauge whether that program is successful, because it doesn't involve case management, it is just a financial support. The average grant is $250. It's not a one time and will never help you again. It is, if you receive assistance, you can't receive help again for 6 months, and there's a yearly limit and a lifetime limit. So oftentimes the families we serve, they kind of live in crises. And so if we're able to help somebody and then 2 years later, we're able to give them a couple hundred bucks to help them out with a rent crisis, and that keeps them housed for a couple more years, we see that as a good value for our donations for sure. So what we do is after somebody has received a financial gift, he does what I call follow-up phone calls. So at 6 months and 12 months of receiving a gift, he contacts their landlord and asks one question: are they still housed? Because right, that's what we want to know. We're not offering other wraparound services. And so literally through the life of this program, at the 6 month mark, 80% of the families are still housed. And at the 1 year mark, 75% of the families are still housed, which is really an amazing statistics in that all of the families, in order to qualify for the program, need to have received an eviction notice. So they already had one foot out the door before they received a little bit of this help. So that, thank goodness, we've been able to continue that program with some additional financial support and just kind of adjust how it works to help folks in the community. One of our other programs that you might not know a lot about is called Safe Haven. And Safe Haven is, and it's been around 25 years, and it's located on the east side of Madison. And it is a day program for homeless folks who have mental health issues, which is one of the leading causes of homelessness here in Dane County and, you know, throughout the United States. So all of the people who come to the program need to have a diagnosis of a mental illness and, of course, be homeless. So it's a day program. We're open every single day. How this was affected during the pandemic is we had to shorten our hours because, like many businesses in town, we had staff that that were unable to work either due to their age or their own health factors. So we were dealing with quite a bit of loss of staff throughout our different programs. And so the way that this program was affected, that we had to reduce the hours that we were open. Normally we're open every day from 9 until 6 p.m. So we're able to serve breakfast, lunch, and supper. There's showers, there's laundry, you know, they can use it as an address, they can use the telephone. And it's a good program in that we offer like a lot of one-on-one services. We see about 40 clients a day coming for those services. And we really partner with the Beacon downtown, which is the county's day resource center. You know, they serve anywhere from 200 to 225 people a day in their program. But what we have found in the 3 years that they have been open is that it's not the best environment for folks who have really serious mental health issues. Just the large number of people and all the volume of things that are going on there. What we have noticed is our singles who have mental health issues really struggle in that environment. So we actually have a staff person who goes to the Beacon once a week and meets with the staff and asks if there's any folks who might be a better fit for our program. And then she literally transports them, you know, because the safe haven is, it's over by off of Stoughton Road over there on Nakusa Trail. And so it's a good bus distance away for folks, where the Beacon is in walking distance. But it's a wonderful place where people can get connected to benefits and to disability, maybe get a little job. And then attached to the building are 14 single rooms. And it's permanent housing. And so that is for folks who have dropped in for day services. Once we have an opening and once they have an income and they're ready to be housed, they can move into one of those rooms. They can come downstairs, have the three meals a day and all of the staff support. The rent there, it's $400, and that includes utilities and all of the meals and all of the case management support. So it's a wonderful program to help really the most needy of our homeless neighbors. So we actually will be soon expanding the hours back open. We kind of opened up Porch Light on the 8th of June, as many programs as we could to continue to help the need. One of our programs that we had to end pretty quickly, had to close down pretty quickly when the pandemic started in March, was our Porch Light Products program, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Porch Light Products is our employment and job training program for folks who are previously homeless and have disabilities. And we train them how to can and preserve food. And we make 12 different products that you will find in local grocery stores and restaurants in the community. We have about anywhere from 18 to 22 formerly homeless individuals who now either live in Porch Light housing or have transitioned into the community who, my son is knocking on my door. Honey, I'm on my Zoom call. I can't talk, sweetie. My daughter, 13. It's all right, honey. And so anyways, who we train how to make these jams and jellies, sauerkraut, dilly beans. If you're not yet familiar with our Porch Light products, you can find them in your local grocery stores. All of the proceeds go back to hiring more individuals. We buy all of our produce from local farmers. And so that was literally one of our first programs that needed to close down because of the pandemic, right? We're working around food, we're in close quarters. We have a beautiful new kitchen, commercial kitchen that we built 3 years ago on the east side of Madison, off of East Washington. You know, all of the people that work there, it's an older population. We hire a lot of veterans. They have a lot of health issues. So it was just kind of a realistic thing that program would close down. And then, you know, any of our folks, you know, especially our residents who are also Porch Light employees, you know, we help them to apply for their unemployment benefits and to get their stimulus money and that kind of stuff so they could stay housed and stay productive during their time off from work. We actually just reopened up Porch Light Products 2 weeks ago, just a little bit, because it's produce time, right? You got to get the rhubarbs and the strawberries when they're in season. And so our farmers said the rhubarbs and the strawberries, not yet. We don't have strawberries quite yet, but I think we're done with the rhubarb. So literally like March 27th, I had two staff people that the director and our canner, Patrick, he's a veteran that lived in our veterans program. He's our full-time canner. They came and received a huge shipment of rhubarb from a local farmer. And what we do, because as you know, those particular two items, you know, there's just a month or two that you can get those things. And so we get tons of it, clean it all, process it all, cut it all up. And then we have a huge walk-in freezer so that throughout the year we can make our jams and our different products that utilize the rhubarb and the strawberries. So that I think will start to slowly open up. And of course, all of our programs, we have a cleaning regime. We have all of the masks and the gloves. And the nice thing about Portslide Products is it's because it's such a large commercial kitchen, folks can really spread out at their own individual tables and kind of clean their own space and that kind of thing. But we're still just three people at a time working in that program. But it's good. They were all itching to get back to work. This is how they make a little bit of money by working in the program, but it's about community and teamwork and feeling good about yourself and telling people that, look, I made this, right? You know, that they love the program. We normally would always do sampling in the grocery stores. That stopped right away, and that has not come back yet. So hopefully, once the world gets back to normal, we'll be able to start sampling of the products again. Another program that was deemed an essential program and has been going on this whole time is our outreach program. We do outreach on the streets for homeless men and women who are sleeping on the streets during this difficult time, and do so throughout the winter, 365 days a year. We have two full-time staff workers, Ben and Will, who've been doing that program for years. One of them needed to be laid off. He's 78 years old, and every day is out into the woods looking for folks. So we told him he just needed to take a break for a few months, and we'll welcome him back as life settles down. But Ben has been working full time. There are even more folks sleeping out on the streets during this pandemic. I think it's a little bit of not wanting to be in a mass shelter with lots of people during this time, kind of a little bit of that survivalist mentality. He doesn't outreach to the folks who you would see on State Street panhandling and that kind of stuff. The city has an outreach program for those folks. It's what we call the remote campers, right? It's people who are out in the woods. They're sleeping in their cars. They're sleeping in their camper. They are completely disconnected with society and really want nothing to do with us. And so what Bill and Ben and Will do is try to make daily contact with people. And those first couple weeks, really, people don't want anything to do with them. So it's being friendly. It's letting them know they're going to show up. Maybe they bring a little food. Maybe they bring some supplies, a blanket or something like that. Try to figure out what their needs are. And so, you know, at this time of year, we are, he's getting donations for tents in the wintertime. He gets boots and winter coats and those types of things. And our goal with the remote campers is to get them into shelter. To actually move them straight into permanent housing is not a step that they are ready to take. It's mostly single men who have mental health issues, active alcohol and drug issues, a lot of veterans, some women, not really families. And so that's kind of a daily outreach, literally, to these folks. The city, probably right in the middle of the pandemic, worked very closely with us to set up some stations where we put porta potties and hand washing stations at a couple of the different campsites, just to help people keep the place, you know, a little bit more clean and have the ability to wash their hands and all that kind of stuff. I have not heard of any kind of outbreaks or any positive cases at all. And so I think that has been successful. So that outreach will continue. And our goal, like I said, is to get folks into shelter and eventually into housing. So that's what the group at the shelter does, is work for folks to get into housing. One of the largest programs that we have at Porchlight is our affordable housing. We have 370 units of housing that we own. We are the property manager. We select all of the tenants. We do all of our own maintenance, and we do all of our own case management. And so it's kind of a philosophy that has worked for us these past 30 years. I would say there's about 34 units that are family units, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. And then the rest are efficiencies in one bedrooms or what we call SROs, single rooms for men and women. You know, we're kind of known as the agency that works with single men. And I think that's primarily because we run the men's shelter. But we have quite a bit of programming for single women and for families, including our housing, including the eviction prevention program. That's mostly families that are able to receive those support. So the families pay for rent when they live in our housing. They have leases, so they are just regular tenants, you know, like anybody who lives in an apartment. The single rooms rent can be anywhere from $300 to $350. We do our best to keep those affordable because it's often people who are on disability, and a disability check is maybe $800 a month. In most places, the Porchlight pays utilities. So they, you know, don't have to pay that expense, you know, but some of the family units, some of the four bedrooms are $850 a month, which for Madison and fair market is very affordable. But for our clients, you know, that's a lot of money. How we do it with Porchlight housing is, you know, in the community, you need to make 3 times the rent. So if the rent is $600, you need to make 3 times that in order to even be accepted into that apartment. So in Porchlight housing, folks need to make 2 times the rent. So for our single rooms that are only $300, they just need to make $600 a month, right, to live there. So for a family unit that might be $800, of course, they would need to make $1,600 a month. So the families, you know, a lot of them are full-time workers or they have a child who's on disability. You know, so they're able to, you know, make that work, but they are spending quite a bit of their income on rent. So the housing was really affected by the pandemic. Our caseworkers went remotely. I literally lost 4 out of my 5 maintenance men because of their own health issues. And because the units are going, they're going into occupied units, right? And our clients, our residents, they didn't really feel like they needed to wear masks and social distance and all that kind of stuff that we're all doing religiously. So we are slowly, you know, coming back into that. It's been difficult for the residents to not have a case manager that they can see and drive them to appointments and come to their house and check their housekeeping and bring them to a food pantry. So we are, you know, slowly coming back into work where we're starting to do those things. All of our residents have masks, home sewn masks that people have made, which has been amazing. Our last program that I want to talk with briefly before we take some questions, the men's shelter that you guys know so very well. That was our number one priority, right? When this pandemic hit, we knew we had to get out of Grace Church and our 2 other church basements. So it took 2 weeks where we moved out to Warner Park Rec Center, which I thought was pretty darn quickly. It was daily conversations with the city, the county, United Way, and eventually Warner Park, where they found a great setting. And Preston, our manager there, he says they're going to have to kick him out, kicking and screaming, because he loves it so much. He says, they're going to have to evict me, Carl. I'm not leaving. Well, eventually we're going to have to go. Warner Park's going to want their facility back. But it's just a fabulous setup. And if you've ever been out there, you know, it's hardwood floors and ceilings and, you know, windows and light. It's just a blessing. But they have 3 rooms, 1 huge gym where we've set up almost 100 cots. The men get picked up from Madison Metro at 4:45 from the Beacon. They send 5 buses because you can only have 15 people on a bus. And so literally 1 bus at a time heading out to Warner Park, where we greet them at 5. We do health assessments on every single man before they can enter shelter. They get forehead thermometer. We ask them 20 questions every single night that the public health gave us on symptoms. And then for anybody who, and they all have masks. Every single one has a home sewn masks. We have a trailer that the city set up for us right in the parking lot. So anybody who has said yes to any of those symptoms or observed, you know, we can call their coughing or something like that, or they get a temperature, they then go into the trailer where they sit and they're able to speak to a virtual nurse. We set that up when we were still back at Grace Church. I literally put out a Facebook post saying I need people to do health assessments. Wonderful, you know, it's usually my wonderful, you know, seniors who do all the meals at the shelter. But I couldn't have that group, right? I couldn't have them in the height of the pandemic doing these health assessments. And so the young people who were still trying to figure out virtual school and their jobs were laid off, they came out in groves. It was so fabulous. And we have the N95 masks and gloves and the Tyvek suits. I mean, we felt really good about that. But one of those people that responded was a nurse who does IT healthcare at Epic. And she called me and said, I think I can set up virtual nursing in your trailer. Can we meet tomorrow? Yep, we sure can. So her name is Bree. She showed up at the shelter 5 minutes. 5 minutes. She got donated tablets and infrastructure from Epic. She set it all up in the trailer. I walked in. She had a tablet here and a tablet on the other side. And there was two ladies sitting in their comforts of their living room. She's like, that's my mother-in-law. She's a nurse. And that's my friend. She's a nurse. Say hello. And we have been doing health assessments and virtual screenings ever since. We have about 2 to 3 Mennonite that need to be diverted to the shelter, the trailer. And so anybody who is symptomatic does not step 1 foot into the shelter. They go into the trailer where the nurse triages them. It's either they go back into the shelter because their symptoms are very mild and they have to wear their mask, or their symptoms are such that they need to go into a medical respite hotel that the county set up, and we call a cab, and they go off to the hotel where they get their meals there, and public health nurse then meets them, or their symptoms are such that they need to go to the hospital, right? And then we send them to the hospital. We definitely saw some higher numbers those first couple nights. They are definitely becoming less and less. We have many nights throughout the week where we don't divert anyone to the trailer. And some nights where it's one person and then they're cleared to go back into shelter. All of the meals are catered and the county has been paying for that. So that's been wonderful. Food Fight comes and prepares a supper meal and a breakfast meal. And it's just like the individual, you know, takeout kind of thing. We have a laundry service that comes and does all of the blankets and towels and sheets and all those types of things. So we're used to doing things the porch light way. And so it's been wonderful to have the county and the city step up and kind of coordinate some of those things and pay for some of those things. So that has been going very, very well. Preston did tell me that the men miss the church meals, mostly the volume of the food. They're not getting quite enough food from the Food Fight meals, and they miss all of the variety that you guys would make. So they would hope someday that it's the church is feeding them again. But I mean, as I'm sure you read in the newspaper a couple of weeks ago, we don't know when and if we will ever be back to Grace Episcopal after being there for 35 years. I think this the pandemic has really shown that that's not necessarily the place for us. And if we get a second wave of this, to have us just come right back would be very difficult. So where will we go is the big question. And the big answer is I have no idea, other than the city is working on it. It might just be another temporary location. You know, Warner Park is ready to have their place back. I kind of think we'll be there for the summer. But the city said they had about 6 different places they were looking at, of which I have no idea where they are and haven't seen them. So we will keep everybody posted. I want to have a couple. I've rambled on here. I want to have some time for questions. How do you want to do questions, Ron?
Thank you. I will look for people waving their hands at me, or if you go down to the bottom menu, there's a thing called reactions, and you could show a thumbs up or the hand. I will not take that as applause for me. I'll just say that you had something to say. And I can see that Maury has a hands up. So let's, Maury, okay, you're unmuted.
Wow, that's a lot of information presented in a short period of time. Congratulations to all that you do. I do have a question. I want to make a comment first. It must take a really special caseworker to be able to provide support and assistance for people like the ones who are forest inhabitants when they don't want to be helped.
Right.
So it does. Congratulations. Yeah, congratulations to the people who you found for that. My question is, the city has talked very often about putting together living areas like East Wash at the old, about 100 East Wash. I think that's the address. They were going to put about 80 to 90 places. Whatever happened to that? And is that something we can use?
The old Mesner's building? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, so the city kind of bought that, in my opinion, a little prematurely, right, to be the day resource center, the beacon. But there's like a daycare center behind it or something like that. Like it was not a good fit at all. And so then they found the location where they're at there. And that's been a very good fit. It's my understanding there is Gorman and Company is going to be building some housing there for veterans and their families. I think that all kind of got slowed down because of the pandemic, but I think they've been approved for some funding and that's going to be a veterans program. Not necessarily homeless veterans, but veterans with families. And I'm sure there'll be a set aside of some ones for folks who have low income.
Now we need to move on. There are some people who have their video muted, so I can't tell if you are raising anything. So you would need to go down to that bottom menu bar on the far left side, and it says start video or something like that, and you can get that going. But I did see Barb Park had her hand raised, so let's see what kind of a question you have. Barb?
What I was wondering is the city seems to have done a wonderful job of stepping up and supporting people. When this is all over, I mean, we've demonstrated now that the city can do that, can afford to do that, hopefully. Are these services something that the city is going to continue to step up and follow through? Or when the pandemic's over, they're suddenly going to be withdrawing all that they've done? I mean, they've done a fabulous job of stepping up, but is it going to continue?
That is a very good question, Barb. And I two fingers crossed, I hope that they do. It was interesting how the whole thing happened because there wasn't, everybody knew we had to get out of Grace Church and First United Methodist and St. John's and get out quick. I mean, you know, March was still cold, right? We were still serving 150 people. And so there wasn't really a lot of conversation about who's paying what. It was just, you know, the city found this and then the county's just like, well, we've contracted with a food provider. And I'm just going, okay, don't speak up, Carla. Don't volunteer for something, right? You know, we help, but yeah, they just didn't ask us to pay for something. So what Porchlight has continued to pay for is all of the staff, right? And so we have increased our staff quite a bit. And we were able to do that because we had staff, you know, we had one person at St. John's, we had one person at First United Methodist, we had somebody downstairs with you guys at Grace. And so we had the numbers, right? So now they're just all together. And then because the busiest time is the intake time from 5 to 8:30. So we actually have two extra staff people than we ever did during that time. Plus you need people to monitor the health assessments and the trailer and all that kind of stuff. So our accountant figured that if the pandemic lasted 6 months, like we need to do all of this increased staffing for 6 months, that we would be, Porchlight would be paying an extra $200,000 above our normal costs of staffing the facility. And so you take that next 6 months and add another 6 months to it, right? You know, and so this, of course, is all money that nobody's budgeted for, that just kind of, it is what it is. You got to do what you got to do, right? So how I see it happening is that the city is looking for a location, and then that might morph into what we've all been waiting for, an actual purpose-built shelter, something that's made not like a church basement, made for homeless people, right, where we can do many exciting things, and that the county would put out a request for proposals for that. It wouldn't be automatic that Porchlight would get it. Of course, we would want to get it and be the people who did it. So we're having those conversations. And so I think, yes, for the first time in 35 years, this would be a partnership with the city, the county, and Porchlight and the community for the first times ever. So if there is a blessing of the pandemic, this might be our blessing.
Yes, and it's about time, I have to say.
Amen.
I see that we have time for maybe about one more question, and Penny Eiler has got her hand up.
I wondered if all the demonstrations about police reforms and Black Lives Matter has any impact on your population.
I do know that folks have that live in our housing, especially not so much the men at the shelter, right? Because, you know, their focus is just on, I need a place to sleep tonight, and where's my food coming from, and how could I get my job back, and that kind of stuff. But there are several of our residents who are, you know, participating in the protests and having conversations with staff about that. So I think that you know, they want to know how they can participate, but how they can stay safe, right? You know, they don't, you know, like, especially I was thankful that the Grace Church was not, our shelter was not downtown during, you know, not, of course, the peaceful protests, but all of the rioting that happened after that. That would have been very scary and unfortunate for the men being down there. But I think all of the positive things that have come out of it, the peaceful protests and the beautiful paintings and all those types of things. I've had several conversations in the residents, and it sparked conversations, right? And I think that's what it's all about. It needs to spark conversations.
Thank you so much. What we're going to do now is wrap up this discussion. Really nice to hear from you. And we're going to move on.
I didn't know where we could send some money.
I think we can let that be heard.
Thank you. A couple different ways. So if you're tech savvy, you can go on our Porchlight website, right? And there's a huge button that says donate. I've had folks, you know, say, you know, well, we want to give to the men's shelter, or we love that eviction prevention program that you're talking about. There's literally you push donate and there's a drop down button. It lists all of our programs. You can just do general, where the greatest need is. Or you can say, I want to continue to support the men's shelter. And so you click that, or I want to give to keep families housed. So you click the Digs program. Or you can write a check out to Porchlight and mail it to our Brook Street office.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's time now for us to move on to Mary Mullen and the closing words, and then we'll have a closing song after that.
I'm reading the closing words by the New City Initiative, Portland, Oregon. People don't become homeless when they run out of money, at least not right away. They become homeless when they run out of relationships. And this means that the solution to homelessness necessarily involves reestablishment of relationships and community. And I think we heard our speaker talk just about that, trying to make relationships with those people that are remote campers. Thank you.
All right, we will move on then to the, I'm gonna move on into the video. Yeah, the closing song.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mark David Buckles, and I'm going to be sharing the song Bright Morning Star with you. I hope you'll sing it with me. Some of you might be familiar with the song in the Unitarian Universalist hymnal, Bright Morning Stars. My understanding is that the song originally was Bright Morning Star, about our sun. Bright Morning Star is arising, or Bright Morning Stars arising. This is also a different melody from maybe the one you've heard. It's, in my understanding, an old Appalachian melody. And it's got some additional verses written by my friend and colleague, Matt Meyer. So here's how the song goes. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning stars arising. Day is a breaking in my soul. So I'm going to line that out for you. I'll sing one line, invite you to sing it back with me. Bright morning stars arising. Your turn. Bright morning stars arising. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. Day is a breaking. Day is a breaking in my soul. So let's try that whole thing together. Bright morning. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning stars. Bright morning stars arising. Day is a breaking in my soul. Rise up from morning slumber. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. Rise up and hear your calling. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. Oh, lift your voice to heaven. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. We'll sing out loud for justice. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. We'll build this faith together. 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 Day is a breaking in my soul. Bright morning star, bright morning star arising. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning stars arising. Day is a breaking in my soul. One more time. Bright morning. Bright morning stars arising. Bright morning. Stars arising, bright morning stars arising. Day is a breaking in my soul. Day is a breaking. Day is a breaking in my soul. Day is a breaking. Day is a breaking in my soul. One more time. Day is a breaking in my soul.
So now we're going to move on to our virtual coffee hour. Those of you that are not going to stay with us, you can just leave the meeting. And we want to really thank Carla Tennis for being here. And you're more than welcome to stay for our coffee hour and chat, but we understand if you go away.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. I'm off to clean the house for my son's high school graduation party.
Bye.
Have a good coffee hour.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you.
You betcha.
Wow, what a big move.